Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Helles Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with Ken Foster, whose new book is City of Dogs, New York Dogs, Their Neighborhoods, and the People Who Love Them. We'll also hear from poet Allison Pellegrin, whose new chapbook is Our Lady of the Flood. It's a real pleasure to catch up with Ken Foster, author of The Kind I'm Likely to Get, The Dogs Who Found Me, Dogs I Have Met and the People They Found, and I'm a Good Dog, Pit Bulls, America's Most Beautiful and Misunderstood Pet. He's back with a new book, City of Dogs, New York Dogs, Their Neighborhoods, and the People Who Love Them. He's written the text, and Treyer Scott created the fabulous photographs. You probably know Treyer from the book Shelter Dogs and Finding Home, Shelter Dogs and Their Stories. Ken Foster, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Now, just one person's life with dogs is just about the best life you or I could imagine. But you've created an entire book and an entire city's life with dogs.
Yes. I really wanted to find a way of sort of exploring the city through dogs and their people and the relationships that we have with them, which really sort of inform our lives in whatever city we're a part of. And so this is what we came up with. And it was really kind of a big adventure putting it together and exploring parts of the city that even I didn't know until we drove into them, really.
Mm-hmm. And some people think having a dog in the city is difficult.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I think I was responding to, and actually you may be hearing one of my dogs in the background.
That's all right.
was, you know, I moved from New Orleans to New York City and was working in New York with the city shelters and doing community outreach programs. And occasionally I would hear from people who weren't city dwellers about their skepticism. I think that dogs belonged in a city or could be happy in a city. And so I really wanted to also show that not only can dogs have a exciting, happy life in the city, but they can thrive in the city and really be an important part of every community that mm-hmm. we have.
Now, you began with one of my favorite writers, Jacqueline Woodson, and her dogs in Brooklyn, Toffee and Shadow. She's one of my favorite writers. So talk about why you started with her.
Well, I knew Jackie from my first book that I did, which was an anthology exactly 20 years ago, uh-huh. called The KGB Bar Reader, and she had been part of that reading program that I put together there. And when I started exploring the possibility of doing an anthology at the time, I immediately knew I wanted to have her in it, and I wanted this one particular story to be the first one in the book. And so when I was thinking about where do I begin in populating this book of New York dogs and their owners, I thought of her because I knew she was a dog person. And then, of course, thought, like, well, if I can get her in the book to begin with, then obviously that's where we start, because that's where I started my first book.
Oh, what a nice, nice memento of that first book. And you have a very special picture of her in an incredibly wonderful place.
Yes, we are in front of the Brooklyn Public Library, which has this amazing Art Deco sort of gigantic doorway that she and her two dogs are settled very nicely in front of.
What better place for a writer, I have to say. Now, there are working dogs, too. Lots of working dogs in the city. There's a dog at the fire factory in Harlem, dogs that work for Homeland Security at JFK International Airport, people who bring their dogs to work at the IAC building in Chelsea. What was it like to see dogs at work?
You know, it was amazing. And I, again, wanted to share that aspect of dogs not just being the pets and residents of the city, but also really contributing as working dogs, because they do contribute a lot in that way and in ways that I think some of us aren't familiar with or aren't intimately familiar with, at least. And so it was amazing to get the opportunity to go to Homeland Security's section of JFK Airport and spend a day with them and watch the work that they do there. The dogs actually live at the airport, which I think a lot of people don't realize.
Right, that's fascinating.
And the relationship that they have with the people they work with is so intimate in a way.
Mm-hmm.
They actually, when we were there, they put a belt on me that is used for training the animals and had me go stand in a line of customers or passengers. And the dog came and signaled because of the scent of the belt. And then they opened the belt to show me what was inside, and it actually had a big chunk of crack cocaine.
Oh, Ken! Oh, my gosh! The things you do for your writing, my goodness.
I know. I was like, I hope this scent doesn't stick with me.
Yeah, I could be in trouble.
And then we also went to Rikers Island, where they have a program where the inmates there, some of them get to live and work training dogs to go on as working dogs after they leave.
Oh, that was such an incredible story. The end of it is separation, you know?
I know. And you know, there was one particular inmate there who had such a close bond with this dog he'd been working with for 8 weeks that it was kind of sad to recognize that, you know, the dog was graduating and leaving the program, but
mm-hmm.
the man himself was not yet able to leave. And the stories of the men there, too, which I don't get into too much in the book, but, you know, I talked to some of them who had been there for years just waiting for their trial.
Yeah.
In one case, it was a guy who all of the other people that had been charged with the crime had testified that he had no part in it, but he still hadn't gone to trial himself.
What a story. Now, in addition to that kind of professional work, there's more personal work that dogs do. And I was particularly captivated by the story of Cecil and his person, Talia. I wonder if you talk a little bit about them.
Yeah, he is a dog that's been trained for work with an autistic child who's a teenager now, really. But her mother is a psychologist, and so she had a lot of knowledge about the condition that her daughter has, because there were other members of the family, in fact, that had been diagnosed with autism as well. But then she was at a conference and learned about the role that dogs can play in helping people who have autism, and she never considered having a dog in the house at all. They're Orthodox, and that's initially how we found them, was that I had read an interview with Orthodox rabbi in Brooklyn who allows people to bring service animals into the congregation, which is a little bit unusual.
Oh, yes.
And he connected us with this family. But Cecil, the dog, was initially trained as a seeing eye dog, and his owner passed away. So then he went back and was retrained to work for this child with autism. And he really is kind of a, not only a emotional support, but also a physical sort of anchor, because when she's with him, she holds on to him, as we all do with our dogs and their leash. But it keeps her from, sometimes she used to have a problem where she would sort of spontaneously dash away from wherever she was. But because she knows she needs to hold on to her dog, she now stays in one spot.
I know. That was such a moving image. And also, I love the way you so gently portray dogs as a cure for loneliness and a way to make connections in a big city. Take the people at the dog park.
Yes, the dog park was really an important part of my first becoming a dog owner.
Uh-huh.
If I want to go back that far. I knew, especially in the city, you know, the dog parks in any city, but also I think particularly in New York City, you have the people who actually are the dog owners who enjoy the park because it gives them an off-leash area for their dog, and also that community of other dog owners in their neighborhood. But then there's this whole crowd of people who sort of gather around the outskirts because they wish they had a dog.
Of course.
And so we started, really one of the first photographs we did was of Will and Hobbs, his corgi. And we don't really get into it, but we actually met them at a dog park in the East Village. But then there's a much bigger crowd of people over in Long Island City that we photographed that really meet every morning with their dogs and walk along the river, which has this amazing view of Manhattan, and also use the dog park there. They talk a lot about the relationships they have with people that they would never otherwise know, but they know each other because of their dogs and this community that they've built for their dogs, really.
Well, you have this beautiful, beautiful sentence, dogs are the great joyful equalizer. I mean, they make so much possible in our lives. Now, one of the points you make in this book, which is so much fun to look at, is that they're woven into the fabric of the city, all of its neighborhoods, from the very ritzy to the somewhat remote.
Yeah. Again, it's one of the great things about New York is that even when you live here, there's so much to explore. And often places that, you know, it's sort of embarrassing as a New Yorker to realize that I hadn't ever gone to. And this book gave me the reason to finally explore some of these neighborhoods and boroughs even that I hadn't ever gone to. I'd never gone to Staten Island. So I had these ideas of what Staten Island was that, you know, were completely false, of course. I mean, it's so much bigger than I imagined, but it's also so open. There's so much space. There's these enormous, beautiful parks there.
And that's where the family, the Muskellas, are, right? They live in Snug Harbor.
Snug Harbor is the name of the park, even, but it's this amazing, huge park that also has, like, little cottages that are used for artist residencies, and there's so much going on there that, again, I was like, how did I not know about this?
Well, and they were such lovely people. You keep thinking, I could live with this family and these dogs.
I mean, that's what I thought. Every time we went to meet new people, I would come away thinking, like maybe they can adopt me. Maybe,
I knew that was the family you wanted to adopt you. I knew it when you mentioned that in the introduction.
Well, not only them, but also the Kerrs in the Bronx, who I absolutely love. And, you know, the mother in the Kerrs, our family, with the mother and young adult daughter are both school teachers. The father works at home doing IT stuff.
Yeah.
They have this amazing collection of dogs and this amazing old house in the Bronx. And the mother even also has this collection of international Barbies.
Yes.
Which I've never seen before. And so we spent a lot of time just like literally unloading this cabinet full of international Barbies while we were there.
Oh, Ken Foster, there really are a million stories in the Naked City. I mean.
Yeah, I kind of hope people see the book and realize, like, oh my God, there are all these corners of the city that I could just, when I have a day off, go and explore these amazing little neighborhood shops, all kinds of stuff.
And look for the dogs.
Well,
now,
yeah.
We miss having you in New Orleans so much, but you're doing some great work in New York, so tell us about that.
Well, I came to New York because I had the opportunity, which was a little bit scary, but scary in the way that you know you can't say no, to work with the city shelters in the five boroughs, doing community outreach and community programs. So I really got to write my own job description, which started out as something called community dogs, but now is community pets. And it's focused right now mostly in the Bronx, in neighborhoods that have no access to a lot of the common resources that pet owners should have, like veterinarians, dog trainers, all of that kind of thing. So we provide free vaccination clinics, free dog training, and we also now have a pet food pantry for people that are between jobs, need to have some help with keeping their pet healthy. And the initial goal really is to try to help people keep their pets rather than potentially having to surrender them to the city shelter.
Right.
But also, as I think the program has developed and grown, it's more also just doing the right thing and building community among pet owners and city services and really just trying to promote the role that animals play in our lives, which, of course, in a way led to the book also.
Of course, this wonderful book. Well, thank you for all you do for dogs and humans. We've been talking with Ken Foster, whose wonderful new book is City of Dogs, New York Dogs, Their Neighborhoods, and the People Who Love Them. You can meet Ken and Treyer Scott, the photographer, Thursday, October 18th at 7 at Antenna Gallery, 3718 St. Cloud Avenue. Ken, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our Lady of the Shooting Stars, was that you last night? Did we dance a whispered waltz? Did I hold you in my sight? When morning came with open arms, she lifted you from me. The sunlight burned my eyes away.
Poet Allison Pellegrin teaches at Southeastern Louisiana University. She's the author of 4 poetry collections, most recently Waterlines, and today we'll be talking about her new chapbook, Our Lady of the Flood. Allison Pellegrin, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I love this little book. I love chapbooks in general because they're so pretty. So explain for us, if you would, what a chapbook is and why you chose this particular form for this collection.
A chapbook actually means cheap book in German.
Well, there you go.
So it's a small book, but it's a small book, a shorter collection, maybe 20 pages or so. This one sort of came to me in a flash. I wasn't planning it at all. I was putting it together right around the time that Hurricane Harvey was causing so much trouble. And I just felt like, oh God, you know, what is going on? This is terrible. This is reminding me of so many bad things that happened to me. And I always turn to poetry when I feel like that. And I was looking through my work because I felt like I wanted to write something, but then I realized I had kind of already written everything that I wanted to write. And so I started seeing the poems in that lens and very quickly was able to pull them together. The front piece poem in this book is Our Lady of the Flood, which I had written just the year before when all the flooding was happening in Denham Springs. I was on my way to a book reading at the Maple Street bookstore. I was writing the poem in my head in the car. So, that's what I was thinking. So this all kind of came in a flash. When I put together a full collection, which is usually 60 to 70 pages, it involves that whole thing you hear about the poet laying all the pages down on the ground and crawling around and the cat interrupting or the dog interrupting and trying to figure out how it goes. So for me, it's very difficult to figure out how to put the poems in order for a full collection. A chapbook's a lot easier because it's shorter.
Right.
Surprise.
But you know, you bring up something wonderful, which is I think a lot of people don't realize how much writing goes on in the car.
A lot.
Even for poets who are word by word.
I have a poem on the front seat of my car today.
That long drive from the North Shore was good for something.
Yeah, I wasn't writing on it, but having it sit there like the good child gets to sit in the front seat.
So. Right. Well, I can't wait to read that one.
Thank you.
But for now, start us off with the first poem in this collection, Our Lady of the Flood.
Our Lady of the Flood, Louisiana, August 2016. Lady, is that you with a citronella halo, ghosting the mud milk waters with a laundry basket of kittens in one arm? You are no mythic Saint Medard, sheltered from rain beneath an eagle's wing, but a hands-on angel of the earthly kind, sweaty, with a burden of buckets and bleach, sure-footed through labyrinths of debris. You take meals in church parking lots, thankful for whatever is served. Some saints are untouchable behind glass, but you ride in open boats with mildew on the edges of your gown, a calm commander of the Cajun Navy's fleet. Your devotees worship outside in a circle of ruined pews, no incense but bug spray. Their voices a cappella because the music of the drowned piano is too sad to sing to. They remain faithful because you are the one constant, honored in front gardens and kitchen shrines. You, with your shrimp boots and rubber gloves, without flinching, you lead and they follow, walking on water to the safety of each other.
I love that.
Thank you.
I love that so much. It goes so well with the image on the cover of the mopping woman, the mopping Our Lady. There's even a mop on the title page, which I love.
I love how they did that. Because I'm not a lover of mops, but I thought this one snuck in okay. And it worked. That poem, Our Lady of the Flood, was inspired by an image that I saw on Instagram, I think from NOLA.com. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think the person titled it Our Lady of the Flood. And it was beautiful and sad. I've never been able to find it again. It was of a couple with a flat-bottom boat, a man and a woman, and in the clothes that you wear after a flood, like your cutoffs, right, tank tops, that kind of thing. They were walking alongside of the boat, maybe in water that was a little bit higher than the knees. And inside of the boat was a statue of Mary.
Ah, yes.
And I thought, that is the perfect of everything. But it was also a mournful image, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, there are so many Our Ladies in this book. There's Our Lady of No Regrets, who has a side hustle in preventing bad tattoos, and Our Lady on the Half Shell, who is a very Louisiana lady.
Unladylike ladies. And
yes.
As I write more and more of these, they're getting more and more unladylike, which I like very much, because I come from a long line of kind of broads, and I want to celebrate that in poetry, which is actually very fun to do.
Yes, broads, dames.
Dames and broads.
That's another great thing. You know? So what was it like once you came upon that metaphor? I mean, I do have a candle in my house that says Our Lady of Perpetual Mood Swings, you know? And so there were all those kind of faux Our Ladies.
Yeah.
So what is it like for you to make them up? I mean, can you stop or do you just do it all the time now?
I do it all the time, but I don't always follow the ones that pop into my head because mm-hmm. I don't want it to just be Our Lady, Our Lady, Our Lady,
right.
you know?
Right.
So I do want them to be special, but it's so interesting, especially around here, the way that the secular and the sacred kind of meld
yes.
together. It's almost too easy to do mm-hmm. this. So it comes to me pretty easily. I don't have another Our Lady poem, but a poem that I'm working on now, it's not the one in the front seat, but it's in the back seat. And it starts with a line from Basho, which is a whole haiku. And the title of the poem is, "Even in Gretna, hearing the cashier talk, I long for Gretna." And so the character evolving in that poem is kind of an Our Lady, too.
Oh, that's
with a
perfect.
Lot of earrings and an attitude.
Yeah. Now, this book includes, even though it's such a brief collection, this book touches on so many of your deep and abiding concerns. Water, life on the water, rivers, fishing, time spent in the natural world. That's your steady inspiration, isn't it?
Yes. When I look at muddy water, my heart lifts and I feel joy.
That's yours.
It's mine. And I try to embrace it. Again, just like the broads in the poems. I mean, that I want that to be elevated and celebrated.
Now, how do you feed that? Do you ever hit a spot where it's just not coming?
Oh, yes.
And you know you have to get out there and do something?
Yes. All of the time. And every time that happens, I try to conquer it in a different way. I feel desperate. It feels like it's happening to me for the first time, even though I'm very well aware of exactly mm-hmm. what this process is. And so maybe if I can just go outside and do something else or give my attention to another type of creativity, my origami things, I was into that for a while, or making little boxes and putting, I mean, just whatever it is, okay? My mother-in-law had this catalog of these beautiful needlepoint things that you're supposed to needlepoint. And I mean, they're huge. And I said, oh, that's what I'll do when I get stuck on writing. So of course I have to have this gigantic thing of needlepoint and I've done about a square inch. I don't feel so bad abandoning that because it's more busy work just to kind of give me a break. And then, of course, reading. I'm always looking to other words, other people's words.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if we could close with Our Lady of Whatever, Allison.
Oh, sure.
I really love that poem.
Thank you. Our Lady of Whatever. I shall require a toolbox shrine with mirrored walls, stuffed with party mints and candles stoked against my legendary wrath. A target practice ace of spades with all four corners clipped, and an alias worth embroidering on pillows, inking on knuckle bones. But I'm a late-blooming lady, and the best names have been dealt. Our Lady of Iguanas, her reptile crown. Our Lady of Prompt Succor, New Orleans Queen, whose magic halts floodwaters at the chapel steps. Our Lady of Blind River, ghosting by pirogue to her cypress abode. Our Lady of Sorrows, heart worn outside her body, her only joy in life to weep. So many lakes, so many ladies of the lakes. Maybe I could be Lake Pontchartrain's Lady of the Longest Bridge, Lady of Cicada Tea Parties, of lighthearted marvels, of sand mandalas reduced to cerulean ash. Our Lady of Shrinky Dinks, Our Lady of Darkness who skips eclipses, Our Lady of Crash Diets and devoted avoidance of the occult, Our Lady of the Hot Flash, of fractals behind the eyes, Dia de los Deadlifts Lady, strong as a man. Our Lady of Notebook Libations, the last few pages left blank, Our Lady of Mystics who arrives without knowing why, who drifts sometimes with numbness and no purpose, her intent awakened only when she tries to rest.
I love that.
Thank you.
I love particularly Our Lady of Notebook Libations.
The Notebook Libations, yes.
It's perfection.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Allison Pellegrin, whose wonderful new chapbook is Our Lady of the Flood. Allison, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Paul Benton reads from and signs Luckland, Sunday, October 7th at 3:30 at the Maple Leaf Bar.
Dacre Stoker, great-grandson of Bram Stoker, and his co-author J.D. Barker discuss and sign Dracul, their prequel to Dracula, Tuesday, October 9th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop, with a multimedia presentation featuring images behind the research and including Bram Stoker's personal notes and insight into the 101 missing pages from the original Dracula manuscript. The Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival presents An Evening of Desire, Tuesday, October 9th. It's a benefit inspired by the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright's themes of desire and passion. Featured performers include Brian Batt, Beth Bartley, Leslie Castay, Brenda Curran, Todd Damore, David Hoover, Nell Nolan, and Francine Siegel. The evening begins at 6:30 with a cocktail hour, followed by a performance at 7:30. It takes place at the WYES Kornman Performance Studio, 916 Navarre Avenue. Tickets are available at TennesseeWilliams.net or call 504-581-1144. Alex Beard signs his new children's book, The Lion King, Wednesday, October 10th at 5 at Octavia Books. Aaron Monkey discusses and signs his book, The World of Lore, Dreadful Places, Wednesday, October 10th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Three local thriller writers, Bill Lofelm, author of Let the Devil Out, the latest in the Maureen Coughlin series, Barry Morgan, author of Habana Intrigue, and Erica Spindler, whose most recent book is Fallen Five. They discuss their work Thursday, October 11th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Le Petit Theater is partnering with Octavia Books for a book club to be hosted by Christina Pellegrini and including special guests from each production. The first meeting is Sunday, October 14th at 1 at Le Petit Theater, and the book for discussion is Pops, A Life of Louis Armstrong by Terry Teachout. Poet Melinda Palacio reads from Bird Forgiveness Sunday, October 14th at 3 at the Maple Leaf Bar. Ken Foster and photographer Treyer Scott discuss and sign City of Dogs, New York dogs, their neighborhoods, and the people who love them. Thursday, October 18th at 7 at Antenna Gallery, 3718 St. Claude. The Friends of the Jefferson Public Library conduct a semi-annual big book sale Thursday, October 18th to Sunday, October 21st at the Pontchartrain Center, Williams Boulevard at the Lake in Kenner. Hours are 10 to 8 Thursday through Saturday, the 18th through the 20th, and noon to 5 Sunday, October 21st. Proceeds benefit the Jefferson Parish Library. The Louisiana Book Festival is coming up November 10th on the grounds of the state capitol in Baton Rouge with a full day's programming by Louisiana writers. An important offering is a series of workshops for aspiring writers at the State Library Friday, November 9th, with such well-known writers as Suzanne Hudson and Joe Formicella, Josh Wheeler, Jonathan Evison, and Tessa Fontaine. Sign up now as these fill up quickly. For information about fees and registration, go to louisianabookfestival.org. Join us for the Tricentennial Reading List every Tuesday at 8:44 a.m. and 5:44 p.m. The Tricentennial Reading List is brought to you by the Hellas Foundation, the John Burton Harter Trust, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.